Well, we at the West Side have recently finished with 9 weeks of state legislative candidate forums, followed by election coverage and political analysis of said election coverage. So now it's time to cleanse the palate. And what better way to do that than bring in the outdoor guys for the West Side Outside? I'm Rich Kramer, and today's West Side Outside is all about the deer. This Saturday kicks off the 9-day 2012 gun deer season, and hundreds of thousands of hunters are expected to hit the woods in search of the trophy buck or the monster doe. This season, there are some changes that hunters should be aware of, though, before they set out, and we'll talk about it this hour. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by the outdoor guys, including Joe Knight and Dave Carlson. Joe is an outdoor writer and editor for the outdoor section of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Joe Knight, good to have you back.
Thanks for inviting me.
Our pleasure. And we've also got Dave Carlson. Dave is the host of syndicated TV show Northland Adventures and a published author. Dave, thanks so much for coming back.
I'm glad to be here, too.
And also, special guest, we welcome to the studio Ed Culhane. Ed is a communications specialist with the DNR based in Eau Claire and was a newspaperman for many, many years prior to his current gig. Ed Culhane, thanks so much for stopping by.
It's good to be here.
And listeners, we want to know what you'll be doing this hunting season, where you're going, what you expect to find when you get out in the woods. Are you going to be hunting in the CWD zone up near Shell Lake? If so, give us a call. We'd like to hear about it. The number is 1-800-228-5615, and the number again, 1-800-228-5615. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page, and we'll try to get your comment or question on the air. So, welcome everybody. First off, I'd like to talk about predictions, and that's always a fun game that the press tries to play every year. Ed Culhane, how many hunters are we going to see in the woods, or how many licenses have been sold so far, and how many deer are we going to have at the end of the season?
Well, we can never really say how many hunters we'll have until opening day, because tradition among gun hunters in Wisconsin is to buy their license as they're driving into deer camp. So on the Friday before the deer season, we're selling licenses at the rate of a whole bunch per second. You know, there'll be a lot of licenses sold tomorrow. Right now, we've sold 446,449 gun deer licenses, and that's up a couple thousand from this date last year. And there's another 216,000 archery licenses out there. So there's over 600,000 hunters currently licensed.
All right, cool. And last year, the deer, you know, at the end of the season, the total number of deer that were shot had gone up a little bit. And you wouldn't venture a guess on whether that number is going to go up or down?
Oh, that would be most foolish of me, wouldn't it?
It'd be great. It'd be great radio.
Dr. Deer told them to keep mum on that.
Yeah. Well, no, that or on that number too, yeah. Or even how many, you know, deer are estimated to be out there. We're saying there's a lot.
All right. That's good enough for us, I guess. And we were speaking just before the program about something that had gone out in the papers that needed to be corrected. Was that...
Well, yeah. Actually, that was me talking to the Associated Press yesterday, and when I was looking at license sales, I was looking at our latest computer run, and we were off the pace of last year by, you know, almost 40,000 gun deer licenses. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, that's out all over on the AP story today. This morning, they discovered an error in the computer run, and now we. Now we know that we're actually ahead of the pace for last year.
Okay, and then the number that I'm seeing here, 414,000. That was last year. Residential total plus the non-residential total, we're looking at 446,000?
Correct.
Okay.
And that could go up very significantly by opening day.
All right. Gentlemen, where are you going to be hunting? Or are you going to be out chasing hunters for interviews, Joe Knight?
A little bit of both. I'll try to go hunting a little bit south of town in the morning, Saturday morning, and then come in and go to some registration stations and interview some hunters for a story.
Okay. Dave?
I think I'm going to be up in the Shell Lake area where the
people are experiencing their first deer hunt under the CWD regulations that changed a few things for them, banned baiting, number one. And also they're asking for a lot of public help from the compliance from the hunters to gather their sample of about 1,000 deer. They're only at about 200. Mm-hmm. And that is from the bow season. That is from the permits that have been issued to landowners within a 10-mile radius of the CWD detection site in the four corners of Barron, Burnett, and Polk and Washburn counties. And I think that's a big point for those people. A lot of people from the Eau Claire area do move into that, have cabins up there, and will be hunting up in that area. So consider, you know, turning in a head for CWD testing. It's needed to create that statistical base that will help them determine if there are other incidents of CWD out there. One was found a year ago opening day. And in the testing since then, nothing has turned up, like I said, of 200 animals that have been tested. But they need more. They want to complete that. And they're kind of puzzled as to why more people haven't participated. It's really quite simple. You just turn in your head for testing. And so that's a need for that. And then, of course, the public has to be on the watch. You know, there was an article in one of the statewide newspapers recently that we're short about 30 wardens in this state. You've got 650,000-plus people out there hunting. Only 178 wardens will be patrolling. Well, that means that the eyes and the ears of people have to be open in addition to trying to find deer and have a good time and look out for their fellow hunters. They've got to watch out for violations, for the cheaters, if you will, and report them to the DNR. That's certainly the case in this new CWD zone where baiting has been banned, and a number of citations have been issued already. And that was going into this coming weekend where they know that this activity could step up. Some of the people violating charged were doing some pretty elaborate things to hide their bait, including putting tarp over them to allow the deer to go underneath to get the corn, but hide them from aerial surveillance.
Oh, man.
So it's always an interesting thing for deer hunting. But the public, you're really the enforcers out there.
Right. And take pride in your state and your hunting season.
Absolutely. And work. And if you spot violations or violators, get their back tag numbers, driver's license numbers or something like that, and report it to the Department of Natural Resources. They'll try to act on it. But illegal baiting is going to take up a lot of time and enforcement time. Can't be done without the public.
And Ed Culhane, let's talk about the CWD zone. It is, as Dave mentioned, something that hunters are not used to dealing with this far north. The baiting is illegal in which counties? Are you able to rattle them off off the top of your head?
Absolutely not, no.
Okay, well, Burnett, thanks a lot. Thanks
Burnett,
again.
Barron, Polk, and Washburn.
Okay.
Those four counties, Burnett, Polk, Barron, and Washburn. That would include such communities in the Shell Lake area, Spooner area, Amory, Rice Lake, and all of the 10 little communities there, some very good deer hunting areas and so forth. And, you know, there people are speculating what's going to happen with the deer and what has been taking place as no corn has been out there. People are seeing more. Bow hunters have been reporting that they're seeing more deer during the day.
Moving around.
Not at the darkness and early light periods, during the day. And I think, I don't know what you're hearing, Joe, but I was talking to some hunters today down in Buffalo County. We're probably at the beginning of the end of the rut, if not more so to the end of the rut right now in this area. So you are going to see, you know, there's a good chance of seeing more deer and, in fact, some bucks out still rutting. And in the north, though, that could be enhanced somewhat by no baiting in those areas.
That would be an interesting argument for those that are against baiting deer at all in the state. If it turns out
that was an argument that was made. When was it? Back in 2003, 2004, they banned baiting entirely for a year, and a lot of hunters said they saw more deer. They had more fun. They were in a more natural daytime movement pattern.
Yeah, that was the Natural Resources Board, I believe, did that, and then was changed after that through legislation, I believe. I thought you were asking me to name all the counties in the state that
Dane County, Iowa County.
Start from the bottom and work your way up.
I wanted to add one thing to what Dave was saying, though, that's really important. The wardens do depend on hunters to be their eyes and ears out there. And we have a couple, there's a kind of a new way to connect with the wardens now. The kind of standard way that's been very, very successful and really, really valuable to the wardens is when people phone, you know, the confidential tip line. And that's, 800-TIP-WDNR. And, but now you can also text, the tip to the DNR. And that's you send that to 847-411. You know, that's the text address. And, That could be really useful. I mean, if you're in a stand and you're seeing something, you may not want to have you may not want to use your voice, the human voice carries, and you may still be hunting, or you may be in a situation where you don't want to be overheard, So the sight of somebody punching buttons on their phone doesn't really tell anybody what you're up to. So that's a good option.
Ed, I've got to ask you, under the last couple of, say, 6 months or so of the STEP administration, there's been a real uptick in the amount of social media effort by the DNR trying to, coming out with a lot of things that are certainly related to our high-tech forms of communication. And what's behind all this?
Well, our communications team at the DNR has been arguing to get into social media for quite a long time. And what happened was, it actually was last year, right before the gun deer season. I think it was like two weeks before the gun deer season, or 3 weeks or whatever, under the STEP administration, she said, hey, go for it. And we sort of got, it's the old saying, be careful what you ask for. We got the go ahead to do everything, So we launched right before last year's deer season. We launched a Facebook page. We launched our Twitter account. We got a YouTube channel going. And and now that's just expanded. And so now this year, in addition to, and we're having a Facebook contest now, a photo contest that's related to deer season. And it's not just shots of, big bucks or whatever. It's, any kind of shots that people think are, show, their feelings or the beauty of the season, whether it's a scene or people, at a shared meal at camp or whatever. We've had chats now. We've had live chats going all week, and those have been great.
What kind of response have you been getting to all of this?
Amazing. Some of us, myself included, were thinking, gee, are we, kind of going overboard a little here? I mean, too much stuff, but boy, it seems like everything we do, has just had, attracted a really good audience. Like I said, the chats have been particularly fun, and those are archived, so you can go online and read those. And actually, sometimes that's a fun way to do it, because it's like taping your favorite TV show. You can skip the commercials, and when you're watching a chat, you don't have to wait while people are typing. You can just, and we actually get more people looking at our chats afterwards, like that, going into that. So we had one, I think it was it yesterday or the day before, about women in hunting, and we had Christine Thomas, who's the UW-Stevens Point, I believe she's a dean now, but she was a professor there. College of Natural Resources, and she's the founder of the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program, which is now a national and international program, but that started here in Wisconsin, and she's quite a wonderful person, charismatic lady, and she's also serves on a natural resources board. And she was on that chat, and it was really magnificent. It was fun to watch that.
I'll throw in also, there was a recent chat where Tom Wolitz over at the DNR took questions about the frac sand mining, which has got nothing to do with what we're talking about today. But
that's right.
But a couple hours, almost 3 hours, I think he went for.
We were busting all the records with that one in terms of people that were signing on and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was funny too, because Tom's, he's an old soldier, and he's not one of these computer friendly guys, and he was really, really worried about that. And in fact, they had me stationed there with him, by his computer, just to, I he's kind of a peck typer or whatever, and I kept saying, Tom, you want me to type? And he's no, he kept waving me away. And he took questions for almost 2.5 hours, mm-hmm. and he was typing in the answers, and which is sort of a marathon feat. And then he got to the end of it, and he goes, "You know, this is kind of addicting."
You know, I think you've done a commendable job too on publicizing once again, not like it was groundbreaking news, but publicizing once again the fact that there are about 1 million+ acres out there of managed forest land and crop. Forest cropland that is open to the public. Now, it didn't take some of us by surprise because there have been those publications out there, and the plat books, of course, have always carried that information. But now, the computer age coming along, it's at your fingertips, so to speak, as current as it can be, probably not completely up to date. But commendable, that's the governor's office and the DNR both publicized this, as along with the access, it's called the 43,000 acres of access.
The voluntary access
Voluntary access program.
No, and that again, is that's a big part of Secretary Stepp's initiative. I mean, she is very, very strong on customer service and getting out there and helping people out. And so it used to be that some of that stuff, you kind of had to be a little bit in the know, you know, to find some of that land.
This interactive map that's pretty nifty. Shows basically all the properties, over 1 million acres. These forest tax programs that are open to the public. And it makes it much easier to find. You can click on it, and it pops up a little box that tells you the owner's name and address and the local forester's name and phone number. If you're good at aerial photos, you can superimpose a map of the aerial photos. I've been trying to figure out where the good aspen stands are because I like to hunt grouse, but I'm not that sophisticated yet. But I mean, if you worked at it a little bit, you could actually kind of scout from your living room.
That's
really fabulous technology. They do. I think once you zero in, and you kind of using the map, the mapping application, and you find out where you want to hunt. I think they still want. I think the advice is at that point. To still go out and either get a USGS, map or a plat book so you can really nail down the exact ownership borders and stuff.
These properties don't have to be posted. They don't say, you don't hang a sign up there saying MFL or Forest Crop Law, FCL. You've got to know where you're at. You've got to know what a 40. Interesting
thing. I think it goes down to 40s. Is that it?
Yeah. And sometimes it says within this 40, there may just be 30 acres that's open to the public.
Exactly.
And it gives you the guy's
name once, number, you, once yeah. you zoom in there, and then in addition to getting then the specific map, you want to talk to make contact with the landowner.
All right, I'm going to have to pause you there. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to the West Side Outside 2012 Gun Deer Season Primer with outdoor guys Joe Knight and Dave Carlson and Ed Culhane of the DNR. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, give us a call. The number is 800-228-5615, or you can leave a question or comment on our Facebook page, our social media presence at the West Side. We'll be right back with more. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm joined by outdoor guys Dave Carlson of Northland Adventures and Joe Knight of the popular column Getting Out and Nightlife, published in the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. And our special guest this hour is Ed Culhane of the DNR. We're talking about the upcoming 2012 gun deer hunt, and we hope to hear from you, the listeners. If you're getting out this weekend, give us a call. Tell us what you're hoping to see, what your expectations are. The number is 800-228-5615, and we also will get into some other updates as well, including the Wisconsin Wolf Hunt update, but that's going to be a little bit further down the line here. The number, 800-228-5615. Ed Culhane, we got some regulation changes coming up this year. What's one of the top, what are the biggies that people need to be aware of, in your humble opinion?
Well, the one that I've been spending my most time on answering phone calls has been the crossbow rule, which was an aspect of one of the pieces of legislation that the legislature, mm-hmm. came out. And what this is, during any gun season in Wisconsin, any DNR regulated gun season, you have the option to obviously use the firearm, but you can also use a bow and arrow or a crossbow under the authority of your gun deer license and the appropriate, you know, gun deer tag. So it doesn't, that's not true during the archery season. During the archery season, you still have to be over 65 or have a disability permit to use a crossbow. But during the gun deer season, you can use a crossbow.
Hmm.
You still have to wear blaze orange.
Okay, okay. And that, I mean, what's the goal of that? Just make it, make things easier for hunters? Or I guess you don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure what was in their mind, but certainly it does create more options. And I got to tell you, there are a lot of happy hunters out there. One aspect of it is folks that have a felony on their record, you know, and you know, you might have done something as a teenager or whatever 20 years ago or whatever, and if you've got a felony on your record, you can't touch a firearm in Wisconsin. But you can buy a gun deer license, even though you're a convicted felon, and you can go hunting with a crossbow. So you can go out if you're with your family party or your friends during the gun deer hunt. You simply have to be careful not to be too close to a gun. You know, you don't want to be maybe sitting next to someone in a car who's got a gun. But if the weapons are in the trunk, you know, you can get a gun deer license and arm yourself with a crossbow. And these modern crossbows are...
They're like guns.
They're getting pretty close to rifles, yeah.
One of the caveats, though, with the crossbow is that you can't group hunt with crossbow?
That's correct. Right, and that in group hunting, for people who might not know right off the top of their head, is if you're in a hunting party and you're within voice contact with someone, you can take a deer or tag a deer that they've shot or vice versa, as long as you're in voice contact without any electronic enhancement.
Gotcha. Outdoor guys, let me hear your thoughts on the crossbow. Are you going to be dragging a crossbow into the woods tonight?
I won't be. I do have a couple of friends or acquaintances who have felonies, and I think it's not all of my deer hunting friends, but you know, a substantial portion still don't have major records.
Sure.
But I think that's nice that they can join the gang, you know, and because it is especially the gun deer hunt is quite a social thing. So
right.
I think it's nice in that way. I suspect they didn't run it by a warden because I suspect it. One thing about a gun, if you're shooting after hours, it makes a loud noise, and everyone in the neighborhood knows you're hunting after hours. With a crossbow, not the same. So I'm wondering if there'd be any increased violations or cases of cabin shooting with that.
There'll be something to watch, yeah, Dave, but, Carl.
I mean, some of that would be going on anyway, you know. I mean, people who are going to be violating, you know, will. So just like shooting with 22s at night with a light or whatever. So,
right.
And our wardens are pretty good at catching up with those folks, especially when,
You can do it a lot more quietly with a crossbow, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Doesn't make any noise, I don't think. I don't know. I've stayed away from the crossbow issue. I'm not interested in them. They can be hard to hunt with from what I've been told, and they're bulky. I've stayed away from it, and I'm a gun hunter, and that's that.
All right.
I did do a recent story on a lady who's about to turn 90 who hunts with a crossbow, and is pretty efficient with it, so I don't think it'd be too hard to, well,
oh, that's cool.
So she's a pretty serious deer hunter, though.
Was she 90 or 80? She's 79, you said.
Right. Thanks for correcting me. You read the story. Understood.
But it sounded good, 90, too.
She's the best about to turn 80. Yeah, she's 79.
That was a good story, by the way. That's a proof that the older you get, the you don't have to do less. You can keep pushing it as long as you care to. And
which is good news for the three of us.
That's right. That's right. We're born to do what we have to do.
You may get more patient. I guess one reason she's such a good deer hunter is she can stay on a stand for long periods.
Sure.
Patience comes with age, I guess.
I bet.
Yeah. I put a marathon 7 hours on a bow stand the other day, and I don't think that would have been possible for me, 20 years ago. One thing about crossbows, the same sort of safety recommendations are very important. We do have I know of at least one case this year where a hunter was, injured with a crossbow getting into a tree stand, with a crossbow that was, cocked.
And cocked.
Oh, right.
Wow. That common sense, though, should take care of most of, those things, once they're cocked, it's... There's a lot of power waiting to let loose there. So, but anyhow, on the crossbow subject, let's go to the phones. We've got our first caller of the evening, and Mike in Ladysmith is on the air with us. Mike, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts?
Hey, yeah, I got there were two things. My original reason I was going to call, I just want to make a comment about the MSL. Myself and my family have been long-term landowners that have been in the forest crop program, and then when those contracts ran out, we re-upped and managed forest law. And the one thing is that we ended up closing a number of parcels simply because, even though for years we had had them open under forest crop law, and it's basically because once some of those books got published and we started getting not locals that would step forward and try to check with us to see, you know, how many people are going to be on the land, et cetera, you know, is that they just show up and they expect to have all the rights and privileges to the point where, you know, they would actually, you know, move our stands and put their stands in place. And at that point, you know, we just say that enough of that. We're not going to, if people aren't going to respect the landowner, then, you know, we'll pay the extra fee. But then I wanted to give some insight onto the bow and crossbow deals. I live in the Racine area and I'm a former Conservation Congress member. And Rob Borman, who is now the current head of the Conservation Congress, this is an initiative that he has been putting in front of the Conservation Congress for a number of years now, and then finally in the last few years had it take hold and make it through the regulatory process, or the legislative process, or I should say the rulemaking process. The main drivers on this is, one, is you have a number of diehard bow hunters that, quite frankly, they just don't want to use guns in pursuit of their sport. They felt that it didn't make a lot of sense that a weapon that was considered to be perfectly legal for hunting deer in one season wasn't going to be, or was not allowed to be legal in another season. Mm-hmm. And they were perfectly willing to wear the blaze orange and pay heed to all the other rules and regulations. They just wanted to have the ability to be able to use the weapon of their choice. And then secondly, in some of the, as you can imagine, in southeast Wisconsin, and I would imagine the same would be true in the Fox Valley and so forth, there's a number of deer hunting opportunities that are on private land in semi-suburban or ex-urban, whatever you want to call it, areas that have fairly dense populations where the landowners there feel uncomfortable with allowing deer hunting with even shotguns or certainly with rifles, and they are more opportunities for people that are willing to go in with a crossbow or a bow during that gun season where they may not have that opportunity where they're forced to have a firearm. Well, and there's a number of other issues too, but those are the big ones. And
that's a good point, Mike, about the increased acreage available. Some towns also, you know, have regulations where deer hunting is allowed, but in the more populous area of the town, they only allow bow hunting.
Mm-hmm. Although I still don't understand, now that you can bow hunt with a bow license through the gun deer season, I still don't understand the advantage of allowing a crossbow with the gun license.
Well, obviously someone who's feels they could use a crossbow, you know, but I think it has a greater range, doesn't it? I mean, a crossbow is
greater range, maybe more accuracy if you're not that.
It doesn't require the same amount of strength or whatever to fire a crossbow.
Well, so. I can tell you that the original proposals that were put up did not include that, so that was something that came. I can't say that because it's after I resigned from the Congress, you know, I can't speak to what was happening then, but up to 2 years ago, the proposals were not really pushing for a crossbow as archery, although there were other proposals, but the main ones were just simply to allow a weapon of choice.
Right, and I believe that actually took place last year when archery the archery season essentially was a change to overlap with the gun deer season.
Mike, you make a good point, too, on the forest crop law and MFL lands. To get to know the landowner, even though you have the right to go on it under those tax programs, get to know that landowner. Try to become a friend if possible. inform them about your intentions and who you are and maybe what kind of vehicle you'd be driving and if you're going to take in a friend or two with you, just what you're after, if you're after grouse or if you're after waterfowl or deer or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. Let them know something about you, and I think it'll be a comfortable experience and might avoid some of the confrontation you were talking about.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, it still boils down to respect. It's still private property, right. even though you're allowed to go on it. So,
right. It's a case where, you know, a few slob hunters or bad apples kind mm-hmm. of spoil a good thing for other.
Yeah. Could I make just one final point on sure. the NFL process? Is I know a big push. Now, I can't say that it wouldn't have happened anyway, but a big push that got the website up and going in the time period that it got going was some news write-ups in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They did a big, long press deal and kind of put a match under the process, if you will. And one of the things that came through in that reporting, and I just want to make sure I have the opportunity on the big radio station here in Western Wisconsin, is to remind people this is not a tax, like a conventional tax credit type program in the sense that it's just an incentive and, you know, the landowners are coming out making a huge deal or a big deal or a huge amount of money off of it. No, this is really probably better termed a tax deferral program because, you know, one of the components that people don't understand or very few people report it correctly is that we are obligated to sell timber. It's not an option, and we have to sell that timber according to a plan that has been approved by the state forester in that area. So we lose some flexibility on what we want to be able to do. That, and furthermore, that plan, when it's executed, we have to pay a stumpage fee to the state of Wisconsin to compensate in some part for the taxes that we're not paying. So, you know, it's not like we just get less taxes and then we just have to let people on. No, it's we have a financial and a management obligation that, quite frankly, we lose control over, and that's dictated to us by the state.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks so much for calling in. It's always good to have another very educated yeah. voice in on the discussion. We appreciate it. And for other listeners out there, give us a call. 1-800-228-5615 is the number. Let us know what you're expecting for this deer season, what your thoughts are on some of these regulation changes, or just give us a call and chat. 800-228-5615 is the number. Ed Colhane, I wanted to ask you about a couple of things here that I noticed in the printout that I got of the new regulations in place for the 2012 hunt. We've got firearms basically don't need to be cased while in a vehicle, regardless of whether the vehicle is stationary or moving. And there's a few different aspects to this as well. Is this, again, you can't speak for the legislature, but will this allow hunters to just be able to draw quicker or just not have to fumble with cases?
I don't know about drawing quicker. The long guns in a car still have to be unloaded.
Right.
And also it remains illegal to hunt from a vehicle or from the road, you know. So I suppose it's more convenient, you mm-hmm. know. You don't have to of course, most of the hunters I know who've got good, high-quality rifles aren't just going to throw them in a car without a case, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. they're going to put them in a case to protect a fine rifle. But nevertheless, I suppose for a short trip or whatever, if some people are just piling in the back seat or whatever, you know, they can climb in there with their rifle as long as it's unloaded, and that's legal. The rule is different for handguns. Yeah,
it used to be a pretty frequent citation during the gun deer season, maybe the major one, having uncased guns. Cause
maybe hopping
one,
in the car.
One scenario, people would get to the end of a deer drive and someone would be there in a car while you left your case back at the other end of the deer drive. So everyone hops in and a warden stops you. Well, there's a couple guys in the car with uncased guns. So,
okay.
Something of a local nature, too. One of your wardens started a program where people can deposit their carcasses, the deer carcasses, that they may not want to leave out in the woods, if you will, because of possible contamination of, or you know, source of lead poisoning of eagles that might be preying upon those carcasses. I believe there's a drop-off site at the ski hill. Is there not, Joe?
Yeah, Tower Ridge. This is an Eau Claire County one. Right. I kind of live in that area, and I think it's more of a littering issue. Unfortunately, you have guys who butcher their own deer, and then they take the carcass out and drop it in a rural roadside, which kind of gives hunters a black eye. So
you kind of wonder why people do that, because it's it's perfectly legal to just put that out in your own garbage.
They want to save the garbage.
But nevertheless, so there's a dumpster at Tower Ridge, and then there's another one at
Lake Eau Claire County Park.
Yeah, Lake Eau Claire County
and
Park.
And these are funded through sportsmen's clubs, and Veolia is...
The Eau Claire Rod and Gun Club and the Augusta Sportsman's Club.
That brings up an important point about CWD, the new CWD zone in the Shell Lake area. What do the hunters within the 10-mile range, what do they do with their deer carcass? Do they have to dispose of them in the garbage, or can they throw them out in the woods?
I believe there's guidance about burying it. I'm not an expert on that, though.
Okay.
I believe it. You need to bury that, I think, like 3 feet or something in order, because prions can, you can have infected soil. Mm-hmm. That can change the deer. But I'm sorry, I'm not totally up on that one.
No problem, no problem. We've got another caller on the. Well, we did have another caller who was going to speak to the fact that they were satisfied with the bow and the gun, the crossbow being allowed during the hunting season.
The kind of interesting
thing
now with those two things that have overlapped is if you're hunting with your bow and arrow during the gun deer season and you shoot a deer, you can tag either with your archery tag or your gun tag.
So, that is interesting.
Yeah. A lot of flexibility in the seasons, I'm telling you. I still remember the metal tag days when everything was registered. You'd better have the metal tag on that deer. Mm-hmm. It's changed, I think, for the better. It's gotten a little hectic, though. There's so many things. You really got to stay on your toes in terms of all of these things. And
there's lots more changes to come, too. There's the deer trustee report.
Right.
And 62 recommendations. And, we've got staff working full speed ahead, on a lot of that. So
when are we going to find out more about, what the DNR does with that?
Well, I'm not sure that we'll see any big changes this year, other than the fact that there's no earn a buck and no October gun seasons. But I think there's the what's called DMAP, which is the working with landowners, in terms of deer habitat. But we may have a pilot program where people register deer electronically. And don't have to go to a deer station.
Like with turkeys,
right.
That's what you're doing.
Right.
Geese, okay. Same way.
Geese.
Right. There's a sort of a DMAP at work. It's been at work for probably at least maybe close to a decade now, and it involves private landowners who are holding seminars, workshops, probably a better word, on their properties for grouse and woodcock management, and in effect also improving habitat for deer. Harry Croy, deceased now, but a very fine land steward up in the Fifield area, always used to say, manage for woodcock and you'll have grouse, you'll have deer, you'll have black bear and all those other forest species because you've got a diverse and a young, thriving forest. Well, these people are doing this up in the Park Falls area, Rough Grouse Society, the Department of Natural Resources. It's called the Coverts Program. And people from around the Midwest have been coming. Hundreds and hundreds, controlling tens of thousands of acres, managing that way, trying to manage better. And it's not like you flip a switch on it, you go home with a new idea, and whoom, the next morning you wake up, and that's out on the landscape. It's something that takes a period of years. It's a very good program, and I think there's a person named Jamie Knack at the UW Extension who has been taking reservations. Two sessions are held each August. We did a little bit with it this past fall, and grouse hunting up in that area, ran into grouse and woodcock, and It was on the teriites.
That might help explain why, you know, some folks who've hunted a piece of property for, you know, traditionally for decades or whatever, and now they're sitting there and they're not seeing deer.
Mature forest.
Yeah, I mean, the habitat's changed around them, and sometimes, you know, the way they manage that could have a better effect.
All right, gentlemen, let's take our final break here. You're listening to the West Side Outside, and we're talking about the 2012 gun deer season. When we come back from the break, I'm going to try to touch on a couple things that we haven't yet.
Wolves,
yes. Also, I want to talk a little bit about the hunting in state parks and on trails, but we'll try to squeeze whatever we can into the top of the hour, or before the top of the hour. Also, callers, let us know what you think. 800-228-5615. The number again, 800-228-5615. We'll be right back with more from Dave Carlson, Joe Knight, and Ed Culhane of the DNR on the West Side Outside. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Outside. We're talking about the 2012 deer hunt, and we have Ed Culhane of the DNR on the program, as well as the outdoor guys, including Joe Knight, outdoor writer for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, and Dave Carlson, host of the syndicated TV show Northland Adventures. Ed Culhane, we have been talking about the deer hunt, about crossbows, and about all kinds of things. I want to talk a little bit about some hunting seasons that are kind of running concurrently with the 2012 deer season, and this is for the first time. You can now hunt coyotes and wolves. The coyote hunters and wolf hunters will be right out there in the woods with the deer hunters.
Right. Traditionally, it used to be that they shut down coyote hunting in the north during the deer season as a way of protecting wolves because mm-hmm. they're worried about people mistaking those species. Now we've got the first wolf hunt going on in modern times, and coyote hunting can take place statewide. So those two activities can be going on simultaneously. And we're really, really asking people to be very, very careful in terms of species identification and make sure they know the difference.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, any thoughts?
You want to mention the closed wolf zones? It doesn't affect everyone.
We do. One thing that has been very interesting, the rate of wolf harvest has been surprising.
Mm-hmm. Without
dogs. And without night hunting yet. So I remember folks out west were being interviewed saying, you'll never meet your goals or whatever. We're actually going to be closing two zones at the end of hunting tomorrow, and that's going to be wolf zones 2 and 4. Those are in the northeast part of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole part of the state will be closed to wolf hunting because those hunters have already met the quota. And the season is really not even,
started October 15th.
October 15th, it goes through the end of January, so I mean
it's barely a month old.
Right, and we could see other closures too. So at the rate they're going, apparently Wisconsin hunters and trappers aren't having the kind of difficulty that people thought they would.
They're setting the example sort of for, I think the state of Montana has had wolf seasons for a couple of years now, but they've not allowed trapping. They've also not been able to take their quotas that they've set up. Now they're going to go to a trapping season, the state of Montana is. So I think about 80% of the wolves taken thus far have been by trappers, leghold traps. It's around 73, I think, have taken. The goal was 116 if all of the units were tapped. In Minnesota, they started with the gun season, November 3rd, the deer gun season, with a gun wolf hunt. And the first weekend, they had nearly 60 wolves taken there. They're up to about 100, over 100 now. In fact, 109 the last I had seen. So they're taking a lot of wolves there. Their trapping season, though, won't begin until November, and then they'll end about the time ours does. I don't think it's going to go that long, though. It's kind of amazing that the 1,100 permits were available, and it stayed about the same number that had been sold, about 860
somewhere.
And I don't know who had those other. Maybe they intentionally got the permits and decided not to hunt.
That's a possibility.
They found out it cost $100 to get a license.
Maybe. Right. Yeah. Or they could be waiting. A trapper who's waiting for winter. You know, winter for
prime
conditions
belt.
Or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there internal concern that maybe a lot of zones will be overshot during the gun deer season because they're. Certainly last year, a lot of wolves were shot illegally.
We're going to be watching it very closely in case, there needs to be a quick zone closures. Because with gun hunters in the woods, the possibility of a large single-day harvest exists. One thing I should say, this wolf hunt is being very, very closely monitored. A great deal of biological information is being, collected from every wolf, that's harvested. And so this is a learning experience, and our biologists will know a lot more, about the whole process once the season is over.
Actually, they talk about later being a prime pelt time. For some reason, the hunters and trappers I've talked to, and I've talked to a number of them, all have said they took the animal because the pelts looked good. So for whatever reason, they may not be in the primest of the prime, but they certainly were in the condition that especially for trappers, where you can make that decision about releasing an animal, if you didn't like its pelt.
And
got a caller.
I think a lot of them are going for trophy mounts, too.
Yeah.
All right. We do have a caller, and we're going to go to Eau Claire. We've got Robert on the line. Robert, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
All right. Thank you. I actually live in Madison. I make the commute up to Washburn and Burnett County to hunt, and I overheard you mention CWD was found in Shell Lake area.
About 3 miles to the west of Shell Lake, there was one deer found, yes. But so far...
That was a year ago.
Okay. Is there any special concerns or anything we should take into consideration? I do hunt about 20 miles north of there, I don't know. I just... I haven't really heard of anything getting that far north. I'm just a little concerned.
Sure. Robert, if you look at your regulations pamphlet, there are some suggestions in there for if you're going to hunt in the CWD zones, which those were primarily installed and have been for about a decade in the southern part of the state, where most of the southern third of the state is in that CWD management zone. They have some safety suggestions for you. Bear in mind, we're not creating any panic here. There's no.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, I know.
There are some things you can.
Miles north.
Yeah. Go ahead and hunt and have a good time. Take your animal. Read those regulations or suggestions, and there's some real simple things that you can do to avoid if that animal were. But there are also things to help you identify such. Thing. Maybe Ed. I don't know how much we want to go into it.
Yeah, but there was just generally one deer. If a deer looks healthy.
There was just one deer. Yeah.
Ed Cohen.
Yeah, I realize it was a random case.
Robert may want to get his deer tested.
Yeah.
Regarding the wolf hunt.
There you go, Robert.
One at a time, folks. One at a time.
Joe,
here.
Jump in.
We were saying the DNR is looking for specimens, so you may want to bring. If you shoot a deer, bring it in and have it tested there. They're trying to get a sample size. What was it?
And they'll notify. Yeah, they'll notify you if your animal is healthy or not. They will get that. And in the meantime, though, I think if you avoid contact, spinal column, or the brain, or any of that, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Best practices, definitely. And Ed, does it cost hunters anything to send a head in for testing within the 10 mile or any of the guys?
Well, no, if they go to one of the registration stations, that's staffed by a DNR biologist, they'll just take the sample.
Okay.
Robert, what was your question on wolves? You started to say something there.
Yeah, I know that's kind of the preliminary hunt, the kind of feeling how things go. But if you guys find that we have a great hunt and we have a lot more deer than average, is that something you guys take in consideration? That maybe wolves in some areas are, beneficial?
There's a lot of accusations.
Yeah. I guess it might be hard. It might be kind of hard to say that wolves being harvested right now are, going to have an effect on the deer population right now.
Absolutely. I know my friend works in the DNR.
Yeah, but more to the point, we've got a huge amount of research going on, a big multi-year program where with collared deer, where we're studying those forms of mortality. So we'll have more information. We'll have very good information on that within a year or two.
And if you hunt in those areas around Winter or Shawano where they have collared those animals, which are part of that study, don't be reluctant to take a radio collared animal. You're part of the mortality factor that they're looking at. The hunter is.
Hey, Robert, thanks so much for calling in, and best of luck to you when you get out in the woods. And that's a heck of a commute to go hunting, but why would you blame him? That's the North Woods are my favorite place to go. Anyway, we're getting so close to the top of the hour. I shouldn't even ask the question, but I'm going to. Gentlemen, Dave and Joe, what are your thoughts on this Act 168, which the Natural Resources Board is creating rules for hunting in state parks? Joe Knight,
I editorialized that. I don't think it's the mission of parks to have wide open hunting. I'm fine with the kind of cull hunt or the controlling the deer herd hunt. I think we got a legislature that wants to treat the state parks as hunting areas in a forest service that wants to treat the national forests as parks and don't cut as aggressively as they should to.
Dave Carlson.
I'll just say ditto, and that's not backpedaling or retreating from this issue. I agree with Joe 100%.
All right. Well, that is our time. I'd like to thank my guests, including the outdoor guys, Dave Carlson of Northland Adventures and Joe Knight of the Eau Claire Leader Telegram, and a special guest, Ed Culhane. Thank you, guys. You rock. It's always good to have you on. It's been too long.
Glad to be here.
Been too long.
Shoot copper. Shoot copper.
Shoot copper bullets. I'd also like to thank Dean Kallenbeck for filling in for Mort Cypress in the on-air production role. And Mort, if you're listening, we miss you and we want you back, buddy. Also, I'd like to thank Hannah Lagerman for promotions, Molly O'Hearn and Grace Fair for keeping me in style and on task. And next week, the West Side will take a brief Turkey Day hiatus, but we'll be back on the 29th. I'm Rich Kramer. Good luck and safe hunting to all you folks out there.